This is an encore presentation of The Breakdown with Christopher Hayes. New episodes of The Breakdown will return next week. For a complete archive of The Breakdown, visit thenation.com/thebreakdown.
Welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, run to the rock. Please hide me, run to the rock.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 24, episode 24 in a collector series. This week's question comes from Twitter user Jamil Smith, J-A-M-I-L-S-M-I-T-H, who I follow on Twitter and you should follow too. He asks, with all we hear about Obama making speeches, how much does presidential rhetoric truly influence public opinion? I think it's a great question, particularly given how much outsized attention is paid to speeches, the reactions thereto, the amount of cable news time we devote to it. And to answer that question, I have probably the foremost expert on this very topic. George C. Edwards III is a distinguished professor of political science at Texas A&M University, leading scholar of the U.S. presidency, has authored dozens of books, including, quote, On Deaf Ears, The Limits of the Bully Pulpit, which will probably give you a little hint as to where he will come down on this question. Professor Edwards, thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, I guess we should start with just that simple, straightforward question. How much does presidential rhetoric truly influence public opinion?
Not very much. One of the ironies of modern politics is that presidents spend a great deal of time taking a case to the public. There's a lot of the people in the White House are involved in one way or another in public relations and certainly in making the president look good. And presidents, of course, give a lot of speeches. They speak in public several hundred times a year. And the bottom line is, and we see this in president after president, and it's not limited to one president or one party, is that presidents, even those who are ostensibly great communicators, generally fail to move the public in their direction.
Let me ask a methodological question here. How do you go about measuring that? I mean, precisely because they give so many speeches, how do you begin to, in a scientific way, in a rigorous fashion, try to match inputs to outputs and sort of ascertain the degree of causality between the two?
Right. Well, that's a very good question. Basically, what I did is I took best test cases, and I started this process years ago looking at Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, two of the great politicians and two great communicators, and I think everyone would agree, living in about the same era, so we can control roughly for, you know, broad forces in politics, and one's Republican, one Democrat. And the public has a general sense of what are the big issues of the time. Let's just take an example. Ronald Reagan was very sincerely interested in the spread of communism, stopping the spread of communism in Central America. And you may remember a big issue during his tenure was aid to the Contras, and he spoke about it all the time. Well, we have lots of high-quality public opinion polls about what the public thought. Not even a plurality of the public ever supported the president on that issue. We look at the polls, we look at what presidents do, and there's always, at any given time, 25 possible explanations, or maybe 2,500 for that matter, possible explanations of why presidents fail, but they almost always do. We can take, for example, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton came in, he wanted to stimulate the economy, he got almost nothing. He wanted a health care plan. It never came to a vote in either House of Congress, and public opinion just moves in the other direction. I mean, there are many, many examples of this kind of thing. We can think of George W. Bush, and the important initiative of his second term was reform of Social Security. The president made a big deal of taking his case to the public, and we know what happened. The public didn't respond. This is not because Bush was a bad advocate. It's because that's what typically happens, and it typically happens because there's opposition out there.
So it sounds like actually you're making the weak case is that presidential rhetoric and speeches don't affect public opinion. It sounds like in some of the cases you're highlighting, there's actually a stronger case, which is that it has a backlash effect. It actually creates opposition when the president goes out and beats the drum on a certain issue.
Well, it certainly energizes his opponents, that's for sure. And I think you can see that with Barack Obama and health care reform, and the president fought hard for it. And what we see is that he never was able to obtain a plurality support, even much less majority support. And we know that the opposition gears up, and it makes it very hard for a president to make his case effectively.
I wonder if there are notable exceptions to this. I mean, the one that comes to mind to me would be the summer of 2002 into the fall, in which the administration expended a tremendous amount of effort and political capital in convincing the American public that we should go to war with Iraq, and was largely more or less successful. I mean, I think the polling moved in their direction. Are there cases where it does seem to work?
It's very rare. Let's take the case in Iraq. We actually had a poll right when George W. Bush took office about, you know, fighting Iraq, and people were willing to do that. They hated Iraq before he'd ever mentioned the word in public as president. And after 9/11, they had fight in their eyes.
Right.
And what is fascinating is, you're absolutely right, in about August of 2002, the administration geared up to take its case to the American public. The public was already primed to support a war by a small majority. What is fascinating is that basically between then and early March when the war began, there was basically no movement in public opinion.
Fascinating.
That is the fascinating thing. So just because you get a majority doesn't mean you've convinced
right.
them. If you say, I want to give you a lot of money, you know, people are inclined to like that often.
My follow-up question would be this. I mean, let's distinguish between the persuasive capabilities of the American presidency versus mm-hmm. the agenda-setting capabilities of the American presidency. It does seem to me that there is a tremendous amount of power and latitude on the latter facility, which is to say, we talk about healthcare because the president talks about healthcare. We talk about Social Security because the president talks about Social Security. We don't talk about the war in Congo or, say, the war in Iraq because the president doesn't talk about those things. So it seems like, do we have empirical measures of the degree to which the president can select and highlight and essentially set the agenda for the larger culture and media?
Yes, we do. And you're absolutely right. The president surely can help set the agenda. He's the major agenda setter. But he's not the only agenda setter. And media attention to issues force things onto the agenda and often force presidential response, where the president sometimes may not actually want to respond, particularly in something in foreign policy. Sometimes Congress is an agenda setter, but the president certainly is an agenda setter. The president doesn't have much trouble getting people to talk about what he's talking about. What he has trouble is convincing people to change their minds.
As a final question to sort of play a thought experiment, I mean, one thing is that it's a small sample set. The polling data we have on public opinions can be a little incomplete. It's unclear how strongly people hold views. Public opinion polling is very bad at sort of mining the architecture of people's interior belief structure, etc. I wonder if the counterfactual is that all of the presidents are actually quite good at persuading people, and if you just stuck you or I, say, in the White House, that we would actually see a tremendous plummet every time that we took to the podium.
Well, it's possible that they're better than I would be, but the reason presidents are doing this is to increase their coalition and make that clear to members of Congress to move Congress. That's the primary reason that they're doing. And of course, occasionally they're also interested in re-election.
Right. It's essentially a bank shot is what you're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. And what typically happens is that they fail to accomplish their goals. Now, there's still a reason to be in the field. You don't flee the field, because if you do, you leave the field to the opposition. So the president has to be in there fighting and at least trying to hold those who are predisposed to support him, to hold that support steady. And that's very valuable in politics. That's essential. Maybe the first rule is solidify the core, you know, and then you try to build out. The problem is building out, building on that, and presidents just have a very, very difficult time.
Right. So that gets at what I would say my final question would be, which is the Moneyball question. I mean, these are smart folks generally around in the White House. I mean, they're not geniuses, but they're, you know, they can read data. They can read political science literature. If they know that it's essentially ineffectual, that the president can't persuade people, then why do they keep doing it? Do you think that the advisors themselves understand, particularly when you look at the proliferation of presidential speeches given, that what they are doing is essentially trying to consolidate people that already agree with them?
I think that they're aware that they're doing that, but I think they also grossly overestimating the ability of presidents to move public opinion. And I think one of the reasons is that getting to the White House is a two-year effort at least, when the presidential candidate and the person who becomes president does basically nothing for 2 years but talk. And he goes out and talks and talks and talks, and he talks hundreds of times. And then they win the big prize in politics. And so it's quite reasonable, it would seem on the surface, to infer that, well, you know, he must be a very persuasive guy because he just won the big prize and he convinced all these people, you know, to vote for him. The problem with that reasoning is that campaigning and governing are not the same. In a two-person election, I mean, somebody's got to win, but it's not the same as, all right, now I'm going to develop a new policy and I'm going to take the case to the people. It doesn't mean you have to win, and it doesn't mean that you're actually changing people's minds about a policy, particularly if they're in a context, let's say Barack Obama begins his administration, he feels he has to deal with the economy. I think that was a responsible thing to do. All of a sudden, people are nervous about deficits. People are nervous about the size of government. And then in that context, he has to propose his health care plan, which he's been talking about for years. But he can't control that, and people then are basically primed not to be responsive to him.
Fascinating. George C. Edwards III is a distinguished professor of political science at the Texas A&M University. He is an expert on presidential rhetoric. Thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown.
My pleasure.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available on iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Eric Nang and yours truly. Senior producers of The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskita. Comments and feedback should be sent to TheBreakdown@TheNation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to?